Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:36 p.m. We are in Belt's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building. Today is Friday, March 8th, 2024. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Greg Jackson is with us on Teams, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Dunbar is away with the National Guard, and Senator Bishop is also away on state business. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off our silencer cell phones. I'd like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Lisa Denny, and our LAO moderator, Joseph Giesbrecht. Today we have two items on our agenda, Senate Bill 196, Employer Drug and Alcohol Testing, and Senate Bill 234, Extending the Marijuana Control Board. First up is Senate Bill 196. With us to present the bill, we have my staff, Lara Ashe. Ms. Ashe, thank you for joining us at the table. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lara Ashe. I'm staff to Senator Jesse Bjorkman. And I present to you Senate Bill 196, sponsored by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Alaskan employers are protected from litigation when they test their employees for drugs and alcohol, as long as they have a written policy in place. They have met the requirements that are in state law for that written policy. They share it with their employees and they follow it. Under that statute right now, they are able to test an employee's urine or breath for the presence of drugs or alcohol. This bill would add saliva, or in the language of the bill, oral fluids, to that statute so that an employer may test an employee's saliva for the presence of drugs or alcohol and be protected from litigation. This bill was recommended because saliva testing offers a few advantages in certain situations over testing urine or breath. One, it does not require a restroom, as a urine sample collection does. It better ensures that the sample being collected is from the employee without having to invade their privacy while you're observing the sample collection. And in some cases, saliva testing can show the presence of drugs much more quickly after the drug has been used than urine testing can do. In the members' packets, there are letters of support from organizations that represent various industries within Alaska: the Chamber of Commerce, the State Chamber of Commerce, the Alliance, AYOGA, Alaska Telecom Association, the Resource Development Council, and the Alaska Power Association. I've also included in members' packets a statement of support from the National Safety Council on the use of the testing of saliva. I have, Mr. Chairman, invited Taya Thomas, the HR manager with Barrow Utilities and Electric Cooperative, Inc. I apologize, I believe her name is pronounced Taya Thomas. She can speak to the specifics of the importance of being able to test employees for the use of drugs and alcohol and when they do it and how this bill would impact that. And then I also have invited Andy Lehman, the general counsel with the Alaska Power Association, and he is also available online. Both of them can speak for a few minutes to the committee and answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ashe. Are there any questions from committee members for Ms. Ashe? Seeing none, we will go to our first invited testifier, Ms. Taya Thomas, HR manager with Barrow Utilities and Electric Cooperative. Ms. Thomas, please state your name for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Bishop. For the record, my name is Taya Thomas, and I am the Human Resource Manager for Barrow Utilities and Electric Cooperative, Inc. Well, I grew up in Kotzebue. I am proud to call Barrow my home. I'm testifying today in support of Senate Bill 196. For background, Busey is a customer-owned utility cooperative that provides electric, natural gas, water, and sewer service in America's northernmost city. We are owned by and exist to provide these services in a place where service interruptions can quickly become life or death situations. The challenges faced by our 70 employees are serious and never stop. The safety of our employees is our highest priority. To keep our employees and the public safe, we have mandatory pre-hire employment, random, and for-cause testing for drugs and alcohol. Some of our employees are required to test under federal laws covering commercial vehicle operators and natural gas pipeline operators. Others in safety-sensitive positions that BC has deemed must be tested as well. Bringing anything or anyone up to Barrow can be challenging. BC's service provider recently shuttered its doors without much notice, leaving us scrambling to find a provider who was willing to help us. Another example we have, during the COVID-19 travel restrictions, it was essentially impossible for BC to get independent drug and alcohol testers to travel to our community. BC supervisors had to handle the collection, labeling, and shipment of urine samples to be sent out for testing. They did a great job, and so did our employees. But I'm sure you can imagine how uncomfortable and awkward this was for everyone involved. None of us signed up to be urine collectors, but that's what we had to do to meet our legal responsibilities and maintain a safe workplace. Oral fluid testing is going to be much better for rural employers like UC because it never requires the kind of privacy that urine testing does. It is flexible enough that it can be performed by a trained collector in the field, or even in my office if needed. Oral fluid testing is also administered directly by the trained collector, so it is much more difficult to cheat than with the urine test. I think it's going to be a real win for BC and its employees to switch from urine testing to oral fluid testing for drugs. As I hope I've made it clear, BC is very interested in moving from urine testing to oral fluid testing for drugs. Once oral fluid testing becomes fully approved for CDL holders, BC plans to meet with our employees and representatives of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers to switch to oral fluid testing across the board for BC. Not only will it be less gross and embarrassing for everyone to collect saliva instead of urine, we think it will also end up being significantly less expensive. So Senate Bill 196 will allow BC to move forward with oral fluid testing. I'm no lawyer, but our legal counsel has made it very clear to me that BC has significant legal protection under the Alaska Safe Harbor Drug and Alcohol Testing Law when it tests urine and breath for drugs and alcohol. To get that protection, BC follows the Alaska Safe Harbor Law's requirements, including employee privacy protections and procedures to help ensure safe and accurate testing. Unfortunately, oral fluid testing did not exist when the Safe Harbor Law was passed, so it was never included in the law as a protected testing method. Senate Bill 196 would cure the inconsistency and give employers and employees the same rules and protections regardless of whether testing for drugs and alcohol involves urine, breath, or oral fluids. I hope you'll support Senate Bill 196. Koyanuk Buckin, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thomas. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, next up we have Mr. Andy Lehman, General Counsel with the Alaska Power Association. Mr. Lehman, thank you for joining us today. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andy Lehman, General Counsel for the Alaska Power Association. I could talk a lot about oral fluid testing, but I think I think you've heard the gist of it here today, so I don't want to waste any of your time. The primary reason I'm here is to answer questions, if there are any, about the bill, about the safe harbor law, or the new CDL rules that help prompt this.
Well, thank you for your availability, sir. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you. Next up, I will open up public testimony on Senate Bill 196. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? I don't see anyone online. We will hold public testimony open on Senate Bill 196. Is there any committee discussion on this item? Seeing none, we will set this bill aside for further consideration. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill.
Hello, can you hear us?
We're back on the record. Yes, Joan, we can hear you. We're all set.
Hello, can you hear us?
We can hear you, ma'am.
Okay, hold on. Here we go. Sorry, we just had our computer go out in the conference room, so we are quickly reconfiguring.
Okay, very good. We're going to get our meeting started back up, and we will be right with you.
Great. I'm going to go get everything we left in there.
The next bill on our agenda is Senate Bill 234, extending the Marijuana Control Board. Today, we have my staff, Conrad Jackson, here with us to present the bill. Mr. Jackson, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Could you please begin your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the Labor and Commerce Committee. The bill before you today, Senate Bill 234, proposes to extend the Marijuana Control Board by sunset date by 3 years. As happens each year during a legislative session and into the interim, legislative audit performs an audit of boards and commissions, which will be sunsetting the following year. And in this case, legislative audit completed their audit in October of last year, 2023. In the audit, you will have noticed three issues of importance that were brought to the attention of the legislature by our auditor, Chris Curtis. She is here with us today to get into more details of the audit and those particular items of consideration. Additionally, we have the director of the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office, as well as the chair of the Marijuana Control Board, Mr. Bruce Schulte. Mr. Chairman and members, the three-year extension, you'll notice, is significantly less than the maximum eight-year extension that is normally allowed. There are a couple of reasons for that. Chief among them, well, I shouldn't probably say chief, but of among those reasons are that there are things in the works with the Marijuana Control Office and Marijuana Control Board and AMCO, and those may make some significant changes that the legislature will want to be aware of. Additionally, a three-year sunset extension of the Marijuana Control Board will align that sunset date and the next audit with the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Are there any questions for Mr. Jackson? Seeing none, we have with us today Legislative Auditor Chris Curtis. Ms. Curtis, please join us at the table. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Curtis. I'm your State Legislative Auditor. So we did a sunset audit of this board, and I believe you all have it in your meeting packets. Overall, the audit concluded that the Marijuana Control Board served the public's interest by holding its meetings in compliance with state law, by actively amending their regulation, and by conducting investigations in a timely manner. The audit also concluded that licenses were issued in accordance with state law. However, the applications were not processed in a timely manner. Further, the audit was unable to verify compliance with the marijuana handler permit regulations due to missing documentation. So I'd like to start off by drawing your attention to page 9. Page 9, Exhibit 3. This is a summary of all the regulations that passed during the audit period. So for this specific board, a vote by the majority of board members with a quorum present is all that is needed for actions, except for licensing actions, which require a vote by the majority of the board. So for this is a 5-member board. So for licensing actions, it requires yay votes by at least 3 members. But for all other actions, it requires yay votes by only 2 members with a quorum of 3 present. So if you can look at your exhibit, you'll note that on the June 2021 meeting, the board passed a regulation that increased the allowable THC levels for edibles with only 2 yay votes and a nay vote by the public safety member. There were only 3 members present at the board meeting. The rural board member was absent, and the public safety board member seat was vacant. The audit questions whether this action was in the public's best interest, and we will be circling back to this issue when we get to the recommendation section. If you turn the next page to page 10 of the audit report, you will see Exhibit 4. And this exhibit shows that as of April 2023, there were 475 active licenses and just over 6,600 active marijuana handler permits. We reviewed 10 new licenses and 8 renewed licenses, found they were all issued in accordance with state law. But we also reviewed the timeliness of the application process. So if you turn to page 13 and look at Exhibit 6, that summarizes the results of that review. And we found that on average, it takes applicants approximately 1 year to obtain a new marijuana license. Given the high financial investment to even be eligible for a marijuana license, we believe this represents a barrier to entry into the marijuana industry. The audit also reviewed 25 marijuana handler permits for compliance with state law and found that AMCO staff did not maintain background checks. Further, we found that of 6 of the 25 were missing additional documentation that prevented us from ensuring that those licenses complied with statutes and regulations. If you bump forward to page 16 of the audit, we state that as of April 2023, there were 59 marijuana cultivators who were delinquent in paying their marijuana excise taxes. And we note that that's a fairly high number. It represents over half of all the licensed marijuana cultivators. Collectively, they owed $3.1 million of delinquent taxes. If you then move on to page 17, we explain the marijuana fees are set at a level that exceeds the cost of regulating this industry. However, when the program was created, legislative intent was added that directed the board to establish fees at a level that covered the cost of regulating the industry, as well as recoup the $5.5 million of state general funds that were spent to establish the program. Management reported that the $5.5 million debt was expected to be fully repaid by the end of FY24. Now, if you jump forward to page 33, you will find survey questions and responses. We sent the survey to all the marijuana licensees, which was 319, and we had a 35% response rate. The survey, just in general, the survey responses reflected a less degree of satisfaction with the board. If you jump forward to page 36, question 5, you will see question 5 that shows asks the respondents to rate the effectiveness of the board in serving the public's interest. And 37% stated that they were not effective at serving the public's interest. And that's markedly less satisfaction than we had at the prior 2017 audit, where licensees were very satisfied with the board's performance. So we recommend the legislature extend this board only 3 years. And that three-year extension is made in recognition of a report that's been issued by the Governor's Advisory Task Force on Recreational Marijuana that may lead to significant changes in this board's duties and processes, as well as AMCO's duties. And AMCO is the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. Plus, a new information system was expected to be implemented by the end of 2023, which would significantly change the license and enforcement processes for that office. So a three-year extension would allow for a more timely evaluation of these significant changes, as well as align the sunset date with the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. So we do have three recommendations, and they begin on page 20. First, we recommend AMCO's director establish procedures to ensure the marijuana handler permit documentation is properly maintained, and we've already discussed those deficiencies. So I'll move on to Rec 2. We recommend the board and AMCO director continue to implement their new information system. During our audit, we found that license and enforcement processes were being administered via many spreadsheets that were prone to error and were very inefficient. So we believe that this new information system is expected to address those findings. And then lastly, Rec 3 on page 21, we recommend the legislature consider requiring marijuana board regulation changes be approved by a majority of board members. As already discussed, a regulation increasing the level of THC in edibles was passed without the important input from the rural board member and the public health board member, and despite a nay vote by the public safety board member. Although this action was lawful, the audit questions whether this was in the public's best interest. Now, management's response to the audit begins on page 39. The DCCED commissioner concurs with the conclusions and recommendations, except for recommendation 3, and that's the recommendation regarding votes to pass the regulation changes. She believes requiring a minimum number of 3 board members would not serve the public's interest in moving forward regulatory projects. The board chair's response is on page 41. The chair concurs with the conclusions and recommendations, except for recommendation 3. The chair stresses that there was no failure in considering public health, public safety, or the rural board position when approving the regulations to increase allowable THC levels. He further states that requiring a majority of board members vote on regulation changes would likely lead to greater delays in reviewing and updating the regulations.
Thank you very much, Ms. Curtis. Are there questions from members of the committee? I have a question. Could you recap for us on that meeting of June 21? Do I have it right that one seat was vacant and another board member was absent at that time? Mm-hmm. That's correct?
Yes.
Thank you. And so everyone is in agreement on the facts that the actions that the board took in passing that regulation change, which would increase the allowable THC amount for edibles, that that was lawful?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason being is that all licensing actions except for all regulation changes except for license actions, all board actions except for licensing actions require only a majority vote with a quorum present. 5-member board, 3-person quorum, 2 yay votes.
Understood. So can you talk to the committee a little bit about the difference between something being lawful and something being not in the best interest of the public?
Certainly. So the audit questions whether moving forward, changing regulations that would impact the rural areas and public health and public safety, whether it's prudent and in the public's interest to move forward those regulation changes despite not having those votes. Now, in reading the chair's response, he mentions, I believe, that some of those members may have voted for the regulations to be out, posted out there, which is very different. Voting for regulations to be put out for public comment is much different than voting for a regulation change to occur. There are concerns brought up about requiring more votes in order to move regulation projects forward. It's valid, certainly, that you always have to weigh getting various members' inputs into making sure you can proceed with administrative responsibilities, certainly. But we do already acknowledge that licensing actions by statute are required to be approved by a majority already of 3 members. And if you look at Exhibit 3, this was the only meeting that they did not have at least 4 members present. So whether this is part of our sunset process, our criteria is in the back of the audit as far as the criteria we use to evaluate board actions. And certainly we are not saying that this was unlawful. We're just raising this to the legislatures for you to simply consider and be aware that this is a situation that occurred and was lawful because of how the law was created.
Understood. Thank you. Are there further questions for Ms. Curtis? Thank you, ma'am, for being with us today. I appreciate it. Up next is Joan Wilson, Director of the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office, joining us via the Teams web. Ms. Wilson, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Mr. Chair, please. Thank you for the invitation. Can you hear me okay?
5x5, ma'am.
Excellent. I am joined here with our new chair of the Marijuana Control Board, Bruce Schulte. I will start with a few prepared remarks, and then I'm happy to answer any questions, but you might want to hear from Mr. Schulte before you ask questions of me. I took over as director of the AMCO office in May of 2022, and I do want to note that much of the audit period was before my arrival here. I think we have many, many positive things to report about the Marijuana Control Board and the AMCO office that are reflected in the audit, but I can even report further changes that I believe fully support the extension of the board for the 3 years recommended in this bill. We currently have, to update those numbers, 461 operating and licensed marijuana licensees in the state. That includes 98 limited cultivators, 133 standard cultivators, 22 concentrate manufacturers, 40 product manufacturers, 176 retail stores, and 2 testing facilities. Looking at the survey response, it looks like approximately 63% of the 112 survey responders responding found the board both effective and very effective. 35% of 112 fully responding survey respondents is fairly low. So I think while we can always improve, it's worth focusing on the effective and the very effective. to respond to a few of the points raised, we are very excited with changes in our review process for applications. I just spoke with our examiners. We have a full staff. We are now looking at applications that were submitted in January 7th. So that's reduced our queue from what it was in the report to 60 days. Much of the time that is reflected in the report is really outside of our control. After an application is deemed complete, we wait for local governments and other people to let us know if there is a reason to not approve an application. And when it gets to after the board having approved and all approvals being in place, we still wait on the licensee to tell us that they're ready. That said, Mr. Chair and I are committed to reducing any barriers, any unnecessary barriers for the industry. We are very excited with our new licensing system called AK Access that is in about 70% rollout for the alcoholic beverage licensees. We're building the marijuana fee process right now. As to marijuana handling permits, we do believe potentially with that capital budget request that you might see separately going for increasing our AK access capability, that may be able to be rolled into there. However, I'm certain we will have the ability to address any audit concerns regarding marijuana handler permits. Our concern was maintaining confidential information about people such as their SSN, and prior criminal acts without assurance that we could keep that information safe. So I believe we've done an excellent job of ensuring everyone who is entitled to a marijuana handler permit gets one and everyone who is not does not. But the issue of documentation to prove our actions is, of course, something that we are very supportive of. The last recommendation regarding the number of votes necessary for regulatory projects, I'd like to just focus a little bit more on the process, if at all possible, Mr. Chair, which is that our board is very active in reviewing regulations 3AAC 306. That's because most of the regulations of the marijuana industry come through those regulations. The statute AS 1738 is pretty much a skeleton, and the muscles need to be added to it. And the board is very responsive to public health concerns, public safety concerns, and consumer needs, and also how to grow the economy. So while you might see that, you know, there was a meeting where three people were present and votes were taken in compliance with the law, that is after a long consideration of other votes in prior meetings. I can tell you the board knew where everybody was on those positions. And if they thought it was going to be something that was detrimental or that a voice wasn't being heard, they had a regular process of delaying consideration. That said, right now we are missing a public health member. I don't believe that public health seat is going to be filled in time for the April meeting. And due to the small size of the board and the fact that I believe the statute has been working just fine, the board considers all public health and safety positions, even if they're not the public health or safety seat. The commissioner's office and I disagreed with that recommendation. Now, normally I would be sitting here telling you that with all the positive changes, a three-year audit period is too short. Most boards extend 4 or 5, but we believe that there's a real benefit in aligning the alcohol and the marijuana audits. And we're also hoping to show you by that point the success of AK Access in our review time. During that time, the board will also be looking at the licensing fees. It set the fees at amount so it could repay the operating budget loan of $5 million. This fiscal year, they will be prepared to do that. And they're also very well prepared to do one of two things, reduce the licensing fees or ask the industry and the legislature for this office to provide more support to the industry because there's so much more we can be doing. My preference is, of course, the latter of what I said, but I respond to the board and to the needs of the licensees. In conclusion, we're very proud of AMCO. We're very proud of the Marijuana Control Board. That doesn't mean that there aren't things we can improve, and we very much appreciate the oversight of this committee and the rest of the legislature. I will be happy to take any questions unless you'd like to hear from the board chair first, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just for clarification, is the budget shortfall due to the delinquent taxes, the three main delinquent taxes?
Through the chair, when you say budget shortfall, could you help me understand what you mean by that?
I thought I heard you say a moment ago that there was a budget shortfall. Maybe I misunderstood. No,
if I said that, what I meant to say was there was an audit finding that the licensing fees were too high. That's what I was responding to. And the assertion there was the board set the fees at that level in order to pay back the $5 million operating loan that this legislature gave to set up the Marijuana Control Board. Before I continue, does that respond to your question? I can address the taxation issue if you'd like to need to separately.
Actually, yes, it does. I got confused with loan and budget shortfall. But okay. I would like you to address, Mr. Chairman, if I may continue, I would like you to address the $3 million uncollected taxes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator, I'm looking at the February 2024 delinquency list right now, which shows 19 current cultivators. So that is 19 out of approximately 232 cultivators are currently on the tax delinquency list. Three of those have a major amount, I'd say over $70,000, that the board has directed our office to file accusations to revoke those licenses. There's maybe a couple that are about between 25 and 50, and the remainder are all less than $10,000. That's of our active licensees. Let me restate that. So of the, let me get the amount, $3.5 million due in back taxes, approximately $400,000 of that is from active licensees. And that's really the only group that the board has some ability to address, to either say, pay back, we won't renew, or we're going to revoke your license because you're taking a loan from the state of Alaska where other people are paying their taxes. I wish we could do more to go after the remaining $3 million from priorly licensed licensees. That responsibility falls under the Department of Revenue, and I'm not trying to say that the Department of Revenue has made any errors. It's just very difficult to go off against these LLCs and potentially their individual members because of just the corporate structure and the ability to basically not pay taxes back. The other thing the board does is says, if you were a cultivator and you're on this list and you're now applying to us for a retail license or a manufacturer license, we look at what you did as a cultivator and determine if that's a factor that should bar you from holding any license in this industry. And I'd say the board pretty consistently has been looking at the active, all the people who, I want to say two things, don't pay taxes when other people do and make sure they don't get a license. But at the same time, as you're likely aware, Senator, there is a bill advanced to change the tax structure because we have the highest tax rate on at least the way we tax currently at the cultivation level. My heart goes out to a number of these licensees that are working very, very hard. The tax is stagnant and the price is fluid and it continues to drop. So while the board and this office focus upon ensuring that people pay the state of Alaska, the other bill that this body might be addressing might be a way to keep all people in good stead and including in good stead paying their taxes to the state. I kind of rambled there, Senator, so I'm not certain if I answered all your questions or if I caused some more for you.
No, actually, you did, and I appreciate you bringing up the bill that we're going to have before us. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You betcha. Thank you, Senator. Other questions? I have one, maybe two questions. I'm concerned, I'm more curious, I guess, to know the rural seat in 2021, was that seat vacant the whole year in 2021?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I wish I could give you that number. I know that seat was held by board member Springer, who was then replaced with, we had Casey Dushock. He stepped in not too far after board member Springer left.
However, he then left the state for school, so that seat became empty again, and then the governor appointed rural member Eli Cyrus. I could report back to you, sir, on how long the absences, the vacancies were in each of those cases.
Okay. That would be
I'd helpful. Have to research that for you, though.
Yeah, it would be helpful to know how long those vacancies lasted. Maybe a follow-up question just to give the committee an idea. You mentioned that the public health seat was vacant. How long has that seat been vacant?
Is currently vacant. Ms. Muse attended her last meeting in January. Her term is up, was up February 28th, so not that long yet. However, I do know that there were a couple attempts to find members in discussions with boards and commissions in the industry, and that search is still ongoing. So I know there'll be at least one board meeting without that individual. Our next board meeting is not until June. I found that that's likely the most difficult seat to fill because of the requirements for that position.
Understood. What are there specific requirements under the subheading of public health that are significant barriers to filling that position?
I'm looking for my statute book, which I believe I left in the other room. But I can tell you by way of example, there was someone in the medical profession that has attempted in the past to qualify for that position, has experience treating patients, understands the public health risks of marijuana. But because that individual didn't have a public health position, didn't qualify. So I guess if the intent of the legislature is no, we want you to have that public health position in state or municipal government, that's well within your purview. Do I think a doctor can take into account the public health impact of marijuana? Yes, a doctor or pharmacist. But you're the boss on that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right, up next, we are going to hear from Mr. Bruce Schulte. He is the chair of the Marijuana Control Board. Mr. Schulte, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the invitation to be here. Bruce Schulte, chair of the Marijuana Control Board. I'd just like to touch on a couple of things that have been discussed, and then I'll field any questions that you have. With regard to the taxes, outstanding taxes that went unpaid have been a problem for years. And as the director mentioned, there's legislative solution that I support, that the board supports, that I hope will remedy some of that. I will say, though, that when I returned to the board in 2019, about that time, the board began to take increasingly more a stricter stance on taxes owed. And as the director pointed out, when it came to renewing licenses, We held a pretty firm line with these licensees that they either had to have their tax debt to the state completely satisfied or be on a verifiable payment plan with the Department of Revenue. And I think that was a welcome stance by everyone. The other industry, the license holders that were paying their taxes on time were really welcome to that approach. And I think it helped us keep some of these, some of these outstanding tax burdens to a minimum. As the director said, we're limited in how far back we can go with some of these licensees that owed large amounts of money to the state and have since closed their doors. I'm not sure what avenues are even available to us to pursue those funds, but again, corporate structures make that even more difficult. But just to reiterate, the bill that is pending in the legislature that would change the tax structure, I think would be a tremendous benefit in this area because it would spread the tax burden out to different license holders. And I think and it would also make the tax sensitive to market pricing, which has always been a problem. In the matter of the timeline for getting licenses approved, that's a concern that I certainly shared. I think other members of the board did. I think the AMCO staff have done a fantastic job of getting that timeline down to a relative minimum. And as the director pointed out, some components of that timeline are out of their control. Input from local governments, for example, and national criminal background checks. Some of those things we just can't control. But as Joan said, getting that pipeline down to 60 days. That's the best we've seen since 2016, and I think that is it's a significant improvement. With regard to votes on that one issue, I want to touch on a couple of points there. The voting question was to increase the THC level for edibles. That subject had been a point of discussion amongst the board for several meetings. That regulation change had gone out for public comment for an extended period. What it did actually was it brought Alaska's THC standard for edibles in line with all of the other states. Ours was a notably conservative level prior to that, and all it did was bring us in line with other states. As to the process, the voting and so forth, this board, we have worked really well together. There is common respect amongst the board members, and on multiple occasions when we knew that there was a controversial issue on the agenda, but a board member who might feel strongly about that issue was not available, then we did push those items to a later meeting just so that we could have that board member's input. And that, I can't tell you exactly how many times that happened, but I'm going to say at least two or three on significant issues, and perhaps more. I do think that we've talked a little bit about board vacancies, and it has been tough for different reasons to keep a full slate of board members at every meeting. Life gets in the way. These are volunteer positions. As the director mentioned, Casey left the state on short notice to pursue a higher degree. Eli Osiris was unavailable for one of the meetings. We all have challenges at times. So I am concerned that putting a hard line in statute that requires a majority of all board members, not just those present, is problematic, and that's concerning. I think that we may actually get to a point where we would be limited on what we can actually do at a meeting just because of poor connectivity for a member who's participating remotely, or a board member who just couldn't make it for weather. That happened the last time. The weather was too cold out in Western Alaska, and the rural member couldn't fly. So I am concerned at that change. Finally, with regard to fees, there's been much discussion. I think early on, the strategy was to try and match the fees to the operating costs of the AMCO office, which I believe everyone was on board with. And I find it encouraging, actually, that the expenses are to a point where the fees may actually be able to reduce the fees over time or offer greater service to these licensees. Overall, I think that's either reducing the fees or increasing the service would be equally supported by industry. I think that got a pretty positive reaction from the board as well. And I think that speaks to Joan's efforts and the efforts of her staff in streamlining this process. I believe that's all the comments I had to offer, and I'll take any questions that the members may have.
Thank you very much. Senator Merrick has a question.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. And Chair Schulte, thank you for being here today. Do you see any benefit to increasing the numbers of folks on the board?
I do not. I think that we've got pretty good representation from some varied points of view. And originally the goal was to sort of mirror the makeup of the alcohol board. So I believe at this time that we have a fairly robust board and a broad spectrum of viewpoints. So I don't see much value in doing that.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions from committee members? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I have an answer to a little bit more information on one of the questions you asked me. I don't know if this is a good time to mention that.
It is an excellent time. Thank you.
Okay. I'm still looking up the vacancy rate. I don't know if I'll get to that by the end of this meeting, but the public health sector seat means a state, federal, or local entity that works to ensure the health and safety of persons and communities through education, policymaking, treatment and prevention of industry and disease, and promotion of wellness. So there is a requirement that those individuals work for a state, federal, or local entity. I know for the ABC board, we amended, or you amended, excuse me, ASO 4 to allow someone retired in those professions to fill that role. And that might be something you want to consider for both your public health and public safety seat. I'm not trying to slow down this bill at all. I think it would run separately, but that's a consideration that would align you with what you did for the ABC board.
Roger that. Thank you. Further questions? Seeing and hearing none, at this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 234. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Anyone online? Seeing and hearing none, we will hold public testimony open. Are there further questions or committee comments from members? Seeing and hearing none, we will set Senate Bill 234 aside for further consideration. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Monday, March 11th. We will take up Senate Bills 121 and 203. We'll be taking testimony on both of those items on Monday. As there is no further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 2:27 p.m.